I knew Richard Nixon well. I started working for him as an organizational field man during his 1962 California gubernatorial campaign. I served him as an aide as he wandered in the political wilderness, planting a forest of favors in anticipation of another run for the presidency. I became an advance man at the beginning of the 1966 off-year election cycle, and then his personal aide in 1967. In the White House, as his appointment secretary, I had the office next to his. My door opened into the Oval Office. Then I was given responsibility for the logistics and arrangements for the president's historic 1972 trips to China and the Soviet Union. And I was the first of the Nixon men to go to trial because of Watergate, although I had no involvement in it. We spent thousands of hours together, from small hotels in New Hampshire to the Forbidden City in Beijing. I knew him so well, but as I have continued to discover through the decades, in many ways, I barely knew him at all. Still, today, right now, I can close my eyes and visualize him standing a few feet away from me, acknowledging defeat in that 1962 California gubernatorial election. Beads of sweat on his forehead as he bitterly tells reporters they don't have Nixon to kick around anymore. I can see him alone in his New York apartment, making endless notes as he plans his political future. I can see him in the back seat of a car in the early morning sunrise, lost on a one-lane road searching for a small radio station to do a campaign interview. I can see him, arms outstretched, reaching to the heavens, luxuriating in the roar of a packed Republican convention hall in Miami Beach. I see him tapping the schedule I've prepared for him with his forefinger, pointing out to me, "Dwight, it says here that when I'm finished speaking, I will dance with this lady. People running for sheriff dance. I don't dance." Or, as I was later reminded, wear a silly hat. And there he is in his bathrobe, a satisfied, vindicated smile on his face as I tell him he had been elected president of the United States. I also can visualize myself sitting across from the president in a helicopter circling Washington, D.C. on a glorious early June night in 1972. Below us, the city was twinkling into the night. The First Lady, Pat Nixon, the chief of staff and my best friend, Bob Haldeman, and press secretary Ron Ziegler were with us, as was the president's physician, Major General Walter Takash. We had just returned to America from a triumphant trip to the Soviet Union, where Nixon and Russian leaders had signed the historic Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty, SALT, among the first significant efforts to limit the spread of nuclear weapons. We were flying from Andrews Air Force Base to the Capitol, where the president was to address a joint session of Congress. During that short flight, I briefed him on the preparations that had been made for his arrival there, his escort into the building, and the extent of the media coverage. We circled once over the White House, then past the Washington Monument, as Lincoln watched stoically from a distance. The city had never looked more beautiful to me. The symbolism of that flight aboard Marine One was unmistakable. Richard Nixon had taken me to the height of power. Me, a kid from the American heartland, from the Kansas plains, who at times had struggled through school. A young man with seemingly unlimited energy, a drive to please, and an abundance of unfocused ambition, sitting inches away from the President of the United States, the man I was certain would be remembered as one of the great leaders in the history of this country. At that moment, for me, everything seemed possible. I was already beginning to consider my post-White House future. A few months later, I would be honored as one of the 10 outstanding young men in America. I was a phone call away from reaching almost any successful and important businessman in the country. And few my age had a resume that could match mine, a resume that might include recommendations from the president, from Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, from Bob Haldeman, and from so many other American leaders.